don't, be a loser. And if you don't appear, you will be held in contempt.
Are you interested in the paranormal? Murder mystery? Real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's iPhone, thank you. Welcome to the Crypt.
What the heck is the truth, jihad? Hey, I'm Kevin Barrett, host of Truth Jihad Radio. Federal prosecutors, Department of Homeland Security agents, and curious passersby often ask me, just what is this truth jihad thing anyway? Well, everybody knows what truth is, but jihad is a misunderstood term. Jihad means effort or struggle. The greater jihad is the struggle to be a better person, while the lesser jihad is the struggle to defend the community. Prophet Muhammad, peace upon him, did say that the best jihad is a word of truth flung in the face of a tyrant. And that's what we do here at Truth Jihad Radio! Every Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 Pacific, right here on Revolution Radio!
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Good morning. Let's be Pat Rabbit, and this is not for public consumption. Hope everybody's well this Thursday morning. Oh, it is the 9th of February. I still ain't got my internet bill. That's highly irregular. I get it in an email, and it says you'll get it within 7 days of receiving this email. And that was on the 6th, I think so. But still, that's very late. I have to the 21st, but what? Anyway, okay. This is Revolution Radio. And we're found at revolution.radio. And we're found at freedomslips.net. Freedomslips.org. Still working on freedomslips.com. I don't think we got it back yet. But still, we try. We're entirely user-supported. And if you go to the main site and go up to the donations word on the nav bar, you will see all the ways that you can, that we make it easy for you to help us out. So, yeah, I found this really cool pedal. I haven't bought a pedal in over 2 years, but I found this pedal. It's called a it's made by Brian Wampler, W-A-M-P-L-E-R, Wampler. And he makes a lot of pedals, and they're really good. And this is called the Euphoria, and this pedal circuit is all about a Dumble amplifier. And I have one of these on my amp hub, my recording studio on my computer. And they give you, you know, tons of amps and tons of pedals and tons of effects. And one of them is that one. And I found it last week. And ever since then, I can't leave it alone. So I found one at Reverb. It was used, but real good shape and real close. They're only in Alabama. Should be here tomorrow, so I'm looking forward to that. I'm stoked. And Monday night, we'll put it through its paces. If everything's okay with it, you get to hear it. Make sure you can hear me plugged in. I can't play my music that I've recorded because it just don't come over right. But since when you record a guitar amplifier, you put a mic in front of it. Well, I've just got the amplifier sitting behind some microphones here. You know. That picks it up well. That's okay. So, anyway, you are at Revolution Radio, and hi, Popsicle Toes. How are you? Now, I'm going to start off with something. Please help us out. Please support us. It's appreciated, and there's a lot of easy ways to do it. Just go to the donations tab and read all about it. Because you know, I'd want you to go there anyway, just to have a look, you know. So, I thank you, bro. But I wait till I get the pedal on that. That comes in tomorrow. The only thing I got running on this right now is my Dave Friedman Buxom Boost, which is a nice boost pedal. And they say the Euphoria stacks well, so I'm going to run them both together. It may make all my other Friedman pedals obsolete. I may be looking to sell them now. Which, you know, if you ever see musicians and the amount of pedals they have, oh boy. That's just my little Quilter MP. It's a tiny amp, but it's 100 watts. Of course, I barely have it cracked open. And I have another speaker bottom on it. And I'm running through a boost pedal, and that's going into a chorus, and that's going into a noise suppressor. I'm going to hook the new pedal up tomorrow, and I'm going to get my delay pedal in on it too. For what really should be a pedal board, but I don't have a pedal board. I just got a bunch of pedals sitting on top of a speaker cabinet is what I'm doing. Anyway, there's this big new article out, and I am going to look at it because it is awesome. Let me see if I can. Where is it? I've got to locate it first, and I can't see because I slept at 10:30. I was up earlier, but I went back to bed. Let's see. I know I put it in here. In game. Blah, 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 blah. I'll tell you what. I am going to go because it should still be at Signs of the Times, hopefully. And let's see what we got. There we go. All right. If I'd refreshed this page, it might not be, but I wisely didn't refresh it. This is by Seymour Hersh, and Seymour Hersh has been around since forever. He goes back to the My Lai Massacre in 1969. He was born in the early 40s. I checked him out. Early 40s, late 30s. He, you know, he's into his 80s now. And he's coming out of Seymour Hersh at Substack.com. And the entitlement of this article reads, Means and Motive, How America Took Out the Nord Stream Pipeline. And Russia is having a field day with this, I am more than very sure. That and also all the information that they have gotten that have allowed them to point their fingers directly at the West and wag them and say, you did this. You were doing this. Had to do with the quote-unquote COVID-19 and all that. It went right to Ukraine before it went elsewhere, apparently. According to the Russians, anyway. They've been through a lot of literature on this. Captured literature, you understand? Now, here we go. To commence. The U.S. Navy's Diving and Salvage Center can be found in a location as obscure as its name. Down what was once a country lane in rural Panama City, a now booming resort city in the southwestern panhandle of Florida, 70 miles south of the Alabama border. Not that far from me either, actually, incidentally. The center's complex is as nondescript as its location. A drab, concrete, post-World War II structure that has the look of a vocational high school on the west side of Chicago, a coin-operated laundromat, and a dance school are across what is now a four-lane road. The center has been training highly skilled deep water divers for decades who, once assigned to American military units worldwide, are capable of technical diving to do the good using C4 explosives to clear harbors and beaches of debris and unexploded ordnance, as well as the bad, like blowing up foreign oil rigs, fouling intake valves for undersea power plants, destroying locks on crucial shipping canals. The Panama City Center, which boasts the second largest indoor pool in America, was the perfect place to recruit the best and most taciturn graduates of the diving school, who successfully did last summer what they had been authorized to do, 260 feet under the surface of the Baltic Sea. Last June, the Navy divers, operating under the cover of a widely publicized midsummer NATO exercise known as Ball Tops 22, planted the remotely triggered explosives that, 3 months later, destroyed three of the four Nord Stream pipelines, according to a source with direct knowledge of the operational planning. Two of the pipelines, which were known collectively as Nord Stream 1, had been providing Germany and much of Western Europe with cheap Russian natural gas for more than a decade. A second pair of pipelines, called Nord Stream 2, had been built, but were not yet operational. Now, with Russian troops massing on the Ukrainian border and the bloodiest war in Europe since 1945 looming, President Joseph Biden saw the pipelines as a vehicle for Vladimir Putin to weaponize natural gas for his political and territorial ambitions. As an aside, Putin is not the empirical maniac that they think he is. He's a nationalist. He's not an imperialist. He doesn't want to do what they... Anyway, to continue. Asked for comment, Adrienne Watson, a White House spokesperson, said in an email, "This is false and complete fiction." Tammy Thorpe, a spokesperson for the Central Intelligence Agency, similarly wrote, "This claim is completely and utterly false." Quote. Biden's decision to sabotage the pipelines came after more than 9 months of highly secret back-and-forth debate inside Washington's national security community about how to best achieve that goal. For much of the time, the issue was not whether to do the mission, but how to get it done, with no overt clue as to who was responsible. Always going to have their plausible deniability, right? Oh, we know that. We know it just so well. Let me get a sip of my good tea here. Rabbits are big tea drinkers. Okay. There was a vital bureaucratic reason for relying on the graduates of the center's hardcore diving school in Panama City. The divers were Navy only and not members of America's Special Operations Command, whose covert operations must be reported to Congress and briefed in advance to the Senate and House leadership, the so-called Gang of Eight. The Biden administration was doing everything possible to avoid leaks as the planning took place late in 2021 and into the first months of 2022. This was planned before Putin entered Ukraine in last February, almost a year ago.
President Biden and his foreign policy team. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan. Secretary of State Tony Blinken. And Victoria Nuland, the Undersecretary of State for Policy, had been vocal and consistent in their hostility to the two pipelines, which ran side by side for 750 miles under the Baltic Sea from two different ports in northeastern Russia near the Estonian border, passing close to the Danish island of Bornholm before entering northern Germany. The direct route, which bypassed any need to transit Ukraine, had been a boon for the German economy, which enjoyed an abundance of cheap Russian natural gas, enough to run its factories and heat its homes while enabling German distributors to sell excess gas at a profit throughout Western Europe. Action that could be traced to the administration would violate U.S. promises to minimize direct conflict with Russia. Secrecy was essential. From its earliest days, Nord Stream 1 was seen by Washington and its anti-Russian NATO partners as a threat to Western dominance. The holding company behind it, Nord Stream AG, was incorporated in Switzerland in 2005 in partnership with Gazprom, a publicly traded Russian company producing enormous profits for its shareholders, which is dominated by oligarchs known to be in the thrall of Putin. Gazprom controlled 51% of the company, with four European energy firms, one in France, one in the Netherlands, and two in Germany, sharing the remaining 49% of stock and having the right to control downstream sales of the inexpensive natural gas to local distributors in Germany and Western Europe. Gazprom's profits were shared with the Russian government, and state gas and oil revenues were estimated in some years to amount to as much as 45% of Russia's annual budget. America's political fears were real. Putin would now have an additional and much-needed major source of income, and Germany and the rest of Western Europe would become addicted to low-cost natural gas supplied by Russia, while diminishing a European reliance on America. In fact, that's exactly what's happened. Many Germans saw Nord Stream 1 as part of the deliverance of former Chancellor Willy Brandt's famed Ostpolitik theory, which would enable post-war Germany to rehabilitate itself and other European nations destroyed in World War II by, among other initiatives, utilizing cheap Russian gas to fuel a prosperous Western European market and trading economy. Nord Stream 1 was dangerous enough in the view of NATO and Washington. But Nord Stream 2, whose construction was completed in September of 2021, would, if approved by German regulators, double the amount of cheap gas that would be available in Germany and Western Europe. The second pipeline would also provide enough gas for more than 50% of Germany's annual consumption. Tensions were constantly escalating between Russia and NATO, backed by the aggressive foreign policy of the Biden administration. Opposition to Nord Stream 2 flared on the eve of the Biden inauguration in January 2021, when Senate Republicans, led by Ted Cruz of Texas, repeatedly raised the political threat of cheap Russian natural gas during the confirmation hearing of Blinken as Secretary of State. By then, a unified Senate had successfully passed a law that, as Cruz told Blinken, halted the pipeline in its tracks. There would be enormous political and economic pressure from the German government, then headed by Angela Merkel, to get the second pipeline online. Would Biden stand up to the Germans? Blinken said yes, but added that he had not discussed the specifics of the incoming president's views. Where he said, "I know his strong conviction that this is a bad idea, the Nord Stream 2, he said. "I know that he would have us use every persuasive tool that we have to convince our friends and partners, including Germany, not to move forward with it." End quote. A few months later, as the construction of the second pipeline neared completion, Biden blinked. That May, in a stunning turnaround, the administration waived sanctions against the Nord Stream AG, that's the company who built it, with a State Department official conceding that trying to stop the pipeline through sanctions and diplomacy had always been a long shot. Well, not built it, but operated, because the Russians built it. Behind the scenes, administration officials reportedly urged Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, by then facing a threat of Russian invasion, not to criticize the move. As well he should have been, considering what he was doing to the Donbass by then. Russia didn't invade. You know, that's this mantra they keep screaming about. No, that's not what happened. Okay. There were immediate consequences. Senate Republicans, led by Cruz, announced an immediate blockade of all of Biden's foreign policy nominees and delayed passage of the annual defense bill for months, deep into the fall. In case you thought Cruz was a good guy, Politico later depicted Biden's turnaround on the second Russian pipeline as the one decision, arguably more than the chaotic military withdrawal from Afghanistan, that has imperiled Biden's agenda, end quote. The administration was floundering despite getting a reprieve on the crisis in mid-November when Germany's energy regulators suspended approval of the second Nord Stream pipeline. Natural gas prices surged 8% within days, amid growing fears in Germany and Europe that the pipeline suspension and the growing possibility of a war between Russia and Ukraine would lead to a very much unwanted cold winter. It was not clear to Washington just where Olaf Scholz, Germany's newly appointed chancellor, stood. Months earlier, after the fall of Afghanistan, Scholz had publicly endorsed French President Emmanuel Macron's call for a more autonomous European foreign policy in a speech in Prague, clearly suggesting less reliance on Washington and its mercurial actions. Throughout all of this, Russian troops had been steadily and ominously building up on the borders of Ukraine. And by the end of December, more than 100,000 soldiers were in position to strike from Belarus and Crimea. Alarm was growing in Washington, including an assessment from Blinken that these troop numbers could be doubled in short order. Now, here's a comment from the editors of SOTT, wherein they say, "The reason for the buildup was hardly ominous. Putin had been stating for years his concerns about NATO moving towards the Russian border, the failure of the West to force Ukraine to implement the Minsk agreements, and complaining loudly about the ongoing shelling of the civilian population in the Russian-dominated Donetsk and Lugansk oblasts by the Ukraine government." How does Hirsch miss that part of the story? Maybe he just wanted to, you know, kind of fluff it up a little bit by using the word ominous. Perhaps he does see it, but it's a good question, isn't it? Okay, and it picks up. The administration's attention was once again focused on Nord Stream. As long as Europe remained dependent on the pipelines for cheap natural gas, Washington was afraid that countries like Germany would be reluctant to supply Ukraine with the money and weapons it needed to defeat Russia. It was at this unsettled moment that Biden authorized Jake Sullivan to bring together an interagency group to come up with a plan. All options were to be on the table, but only one would emerge: planning. In December of 2021, 2 months before the first Russian tanks rolled into Ukraine, Jake Sullivan convened a meeting of a newly formed task force, men and women from the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the CIA, and the State and Treasury Departments, and asked for recommendations about how to respond to Putin's impending invasion. It would be the first of a series of top secret meetings in a secure room on the top floor of the old executive office building adjacent to the White House. That was also the home of the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, known as the PFIAB. There was the usual back and forth chatter that eventually led to a crucial preliminary question. Would the recommendation forwarded by the group to the president be reversible, such as another layer of sanctions and currency restrictions, or irreversible, that is, kinetic actions, which could not be undone? What became clear to the participants, according to the source with direct knowledge of the process, is that Sullivan intended for the group to come up with a plan for the destruction of the two Nord Stream pipelines, and that he was delivering on the desires of the president. Over the next several meetings, the participants debated options for an attack. The Navy proposed using a newly commissioned submarine to assault the pipeline directly. The Air Force discussed dropping bombs with delayed fuses that could be set off remotely. The CIA argued that whatever was done, it would have to be covert. Everyone involved understood the stakes. This is not kiddie stuff, the source said. If the attack were traceable to the United States, it's an act of war. Well, it is that now, wouldn't you say? Assuming you believe Seymour Hersh here, and not those screaming, "Oh, there's nothing to it, it's utterly false," right? And we have three of the rats pictures: Victoria Nuland, Anthony Blinken, and Jake Sullivan. Horrible people. At the time, the CIA was directed by William Burns, a mild-mannered former ambassador to Russia who had served as Deputy Secretary of State in the Obama administration. Burns quickly authorized an agency working group whose ad hoc members included, by chance, someone who was familiar with the capabilities of the Navy's deep sea divers in Panama City. Over the next few weeks, members of the CIA's working group began to craft a plan for a covert operation that would use deep sea divers to trigger an explosion along the pipeline. Something like this had been done before. In 1971, the American intelligence community learned from still undisclosed sources that two important units of the Russian Navy were communicating via an undersea cable buried in the Sea of Okhotsk on Russia's far east coast. The cable linked a regional Navy command to the mainland headquarters at Vladivostok. A hand-picked team of Central Intelligence Agency and National Security Agency operatives were assembled somewhere in the Washington area under deep cover and worked out a plan using Navy divers, modified submarines, and a deep submarine rescue vehicle that succeeded after much trial and error in locating the Russian cable. The divers planted a sophisticated listening device on the cable that successfully intercepted the Russian traffic and recorded it with a taping system. The NSA learned that senior Russian Navy officers, convinced of the security of their communication link, chatted away with their peers without encryption. the recording device and its tape had to be replaced monthly, and the project rolled on merrily for a decade until it was compromised by a 44-year-old civilian NSA technician named Ronald Pelton, who was fluent in Russian. Pelton was betrayed by a Russian defector in 1985 and sentenced to prison. He was paid just $5,000 by the Russians for his revelations about the operation, along with $35,000 for other Russian operational data he provided that was never made public. Excuse me. That underwater success, codenamed Ivy Bells, was innovative and risky, and produced invaluable intelligence about the Russian Navy's intentions and planning. Still, the interagency group was initially skeptical of the CIA's enthusiasm for a covert deep-sea attack. There were too many unanswered questions. The waters of the Baltic Sea were heavily patrolled by the Russian Navy, and there were no oil rigs that could be used as cover for a diving operation. Would the divers have to go to Estonia, right across the border from Russia's natural gas loading docks, to train for the mission? It would be a goat fuck, the agency was told. Throughout all of the scheming, the source said, some working guys in the CIA and the State Department were saying, quote, don't do this, it's stupid, and will be a political nightmare if it comes out. In subquote, end quote. Here's a comment from the editors. So much for the voice of reason. When psychopaths settle on a course, it's almost impossible to sway them. Back to the article. Nevertheless, in early 2022, the CIA working group reported back to Sullivan's interagency group, quote, we have a way to blow up the pipelines, end quote. What came next was stunning. On February 7th, less than 3 weeks before the seemingly inevitable Russian invasion of Ukraine, Biden met in his White House office with German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, who, after some wobbling, was now firmly on the American team. At the press briefing that followed, Biden defiantly said, quote, if Russia invades, there will no longer be a Nord Stream 2. We will bring an end to it. End quote. I think we're familiar with that. 20 days earlier, Undersecretary Nuland had delivered essentially the same message at a State Department briefing with little press coverage. Quote, I want to be very clear to you today, she said in response to a question, continuing, if Russia invades Ukraine, one way or another, Nord Stream 2 will not move forward. Several of those involved in planning the pipeline mission were dismayed by what they viewed as indirect references to the attack. Here's a quote. It was like putting an atomic bomb on the ground in Tokyo and telling the Japanese that we are going to detonate it, the source said, continuing. The plan was for the options to be executed post-invasion and not advertised publicly. Biden simply didn't get it or ignored it, end quote. Biden's and Nuland's indiscretion, if that is what it was, might have frustrated some of the planners, but it also created an opportunity. According to the source, some of the senior officials of the CIA determined that blowing up the pipeline, pardon me, quote, no longer could be considered a covert operation because the president just announced that we knew how to do it. The plan to blow up Nord Stream 1 and 2 was suddenly downgraded from a covert operation requiring that Congress be informed to one that was deemed as a highly classified intelligence operation with U.S. military support. Under the law, the source explained, quote, there was no longer a legal requirement to report the operation to Congress. All they had to do now is just do it. But it still had to be secret. The Russians have superlative surveillance of the Baltic Sea, end quote. The agency working group members had no direct contact with the White House and were eager to find out if the president meant what he'd said. That is, if the mission was now a go. The source recalled, quote, Bill Burns comes back and says, do it, end quotes. The operation. This is going to make things really interesting now that Russia knows all about this. And with Seymour Hersh's unimpeachable credentials and unsullied history, the odds of his being wrong about this are less than slight. Here we go. Norway was the perfect place to base the mission. In the past few years of East-West crisis, the U.S. military has vastly expanded its presence inside Norway, whose western border runs 1,400 miles along the North Atlantic Ocean and merges above the Arctic Circle with Russia. The Pentagon has created high-paying jobs and contracts amid some local controversy by investing hundreds of millions of dollars to upgrade and expand American Navy and Air Force facilities in Norway. The new works included, most importantly, an advanced synthetic aperture radar far up north that was capable of penetrating deep into Russia and came online just as the American intelligence community lost access to a series of long-range listening sites inside China. Interesting. A newly refurbished American submarine base, which had been under construction for years, had become operational. And more American submarines were now able to work closely with their Norwegian colleagues to monitor and spy on a major Russian nuclear redoubt 250 miles to the east on the Kola Peninsula. America also has vastly expanded a Norwegian air base in the north and delivered to the Norwegian Air Force a fleet of Boeing-built P-8 Poseidon patrol planes to bolster its long-range spying on all things Russia. In return, the Norwegian government angered liberals and some moderates in its parliament last November by passing the Supplementary Defense Cooperation Agreement, the SDCA. Under the New Deal, the U.S. legal system would have jurisdiction in certain agreed areas in the North over American soldiers accused of crimes off base, as well as over those Norwegian citizens accused or suspected of interfering with the work at the base. Seems kind of incidental, but whatever. Norway was one of the original signatories of the NATO Treaty in 1949, in the early days of the Cold War. Today, the Supreme Commander of NATO is Jens Stoltenberg, a committed anti-communist who served as Norway's prime minister for 8 years before moving to his high NATO post with American backing in 2014. He was a hardliner on all things Putin and Russia, who had cooperated with the American intelligence community since the Vietnam War. He has been trusted completely since. He is the glove that fits the American hand, end quote, the source said. Comment. Here's another one of these priceless comments. Here we go. He was also Norway's leftist prime minister for almost 10 years prior to his NATO promotion. Being a Western intelligence asset since his youth, this makes Stoltenberg a yet another Western leader who was a literal Langley stooge, as opposed to those accused of being Kremlin stooges, which don't exist. Back to the article. Back in Washington, planners knew they had to go to Norway. Here's a quote. They hated the Russians, and the Norwegian Navy was full of superb sailors and divers who had generations of experience in highly profitable deep-sea oil and gas exploration, the source said. They could also be trusted to keep the mission secret. And in parentheses, it says, the Norwegians may have had other interests as well. The destruction of Nord Stream, if the Americans could pull it off, would allow Norway to sell vastly more of its own natural gas to Europe. End parenthesis. Sometime in March, a few members of the team flew to Norway to meet with the Norwegian Secret Service and Navy. One of the key questions was, where exactly in the Baltic Sea was the best place to plant the explosives? Nord Stream 1 and 2, each with two sets of pipelines, were separated much of the way by little more than a mile as they made their run to the port of Greifswald in the far northeast of Germany. The Norwegian Navy was quick to find the right spot. In the shallow waters of the Baltic Sea, a few miles off Denmark's Bornholm Island, the pipelines ran more than a mile apart along a seafloor that was only 260 feet deep. That would be well within the range of the divers, who, operating from a Norwegian Alta-class mine hunter, would dive with a mixture of oxygen, nitrogen, and helium streaming from their tanks and plant shaped C4 charges on the four pipelines with concrete protective covers. It would be tedious, time-consuming, and dangerous work. But the waters off Bornholm had another advantage. There were no major tidal currents, which would have made the task of diving much more difficult. After a bit of research, the Americans were all in. At this point, the Navy's obscure deep-diving group in Panama City once again came into play. The deep-sea schools at Panama City, whose trainees participated in Ivy Bells, are seen as an unwanted backwater by the elite graduates of the Naval Academy in Annapolis, who typically seek the glory of being assigned as a SEAL, fighter pilot, or submariner. If one must become a black shoe, that is, a member of the less desirable surface ship command, there is always at least duty on a destroyer, cruiser, or amphibious ship. The least glamorous of all is mine warfare. Its divers never appear in Hollywood movies or on the cover of popular magazines. Quote, the best divers with deep diving qualifications are a tight community, and only the very best are recruited for the operation and told to be prepared to be summoned to the CIA in Washington. End quote. The source said, this is Hirsch's source from this article. The Norwegians and Americans had a location and the operatives, but there was another concern. Any unusual underwater activity in the waters off Bornholm might draw the attention of the Swedish or Danish navies, which could report it. Denmark had also been one of the original NATO signatories and was known in the intelligence community for its special ties to the United Kingdom. Sweden had applied for membership into NATO and had demonstrated its great skill in managing its underwater sound and magnetic sensor systems that successfully tracked Russian submarines that would occasionally show up in remote waters of the Swedish archipelago and be forced to the surface. The Norwegians joined the Americans in insisting that some senior officials in Denmark and Sweden had to be briefed in general terms about possible diving activity in the area. In that way, someone higher up could intervene and keep a report out of the chain of command, thus insulating the pipeline operation. Here's a quote. What they were told and what they knew were purposely different, end quote. The source told me, and in parenthesis, the Norwegian embassy asked to comment on this story, did not respond. To continue, the Norwegians were key to solving other hurdles. The Russian Navy was known to possess surveillance technology capable of spotting and triggering underwater mines. The American explosive devices needed to be camouflaged in a way that would make them appear to the Russian system as part of the natural background, something that required adapting to the specific salinity of the water. The Norwegians had a fix. Ooh, those canny Norwegians. The Norwegians also had a solution to the crucial question of when the operation should take place. In June, for the past 21 years, the American 6th Fleet, whose flagship is based in Gaeta, Italy, south of Rome, has sponsored a major NATO exercise in the Baltic Sea involving scores of Allied ships throughout the region. The current exercise, held in June, would be known as Baltic Operations 22, or BALTOPS 22. The Norwegians proposed this would be the ideal cover to plant the mines. The Americans provided one vital element. They convinced the 6th Fleet planners to add a research and development exercise to the program. The exercise, as made public by the Navy, involved the 6th Fleet in collaboration with the Navy's research and warfare centers. The at-sea event would be held off the coast of Bornholm Island and involve NATO teams of divers planting mines with competing teams using the latest underwater technology to find and destroy them. It was both a useful exercise and ingenious cover. The Panama City boys would do their thing and the C4 explosives would be in place by the end of BALTOPS 22 with a 48-hour timer attached. All of the Americans and Norwegians would be long gone by the first explosion. The days were counting down. The clock was ticking and we were nearing mission accomplished, end quote, the source said. And then Washington had second thoughts. The bombs would still be planted during BALTOPS, but the White House worried that a two-day window for their detonation would be too close to the end of the exercise, and it would be obvious that America had been involved. Instead, I think it was obvious anyway, but anyway, instead the White House had a new request, quote, can the guys in the field come up with some way to blow the pipelines later on command, end quote. I guess that was a source. Doesn't say. Some members of the planning team were angered and frustrated by the president's seeming indecision. The Panama City divers had repeatedly practiced planting the C4 on pipelines, as they would during BALTOPS, but now the team in Norway had to come up with a way to give Biden what he wanted, the ability to issue a successful execution order at a time of his choosing. Being tasked with an arbitrary last-minute change was something the CIA was accustomed to managing, but it also renewed the concerns some shared over the necessity and legality of the entire operation. The president's secret orders also evoked the CIA's dilemma in the Vietnam War days, when President Johnson, confronted by growing anti-Vietnam War sentiment, ordered the agency to violate its charter, which specifically barred it from operating inside America, by spying on anti-war leaders to determine whether they were being controlled by communist Russia. The agency ultimately acquiesced, and throughout the 1970s it became clear just how far it had been willing to go. There were subsequent newspaper revelations in the aftermath of the Watergate scandals about the agency's spying on American citizens, its involvement in the assassination of foreign leaders, and its undermining of the socialist government of Salvador Allende. Those revelations led to a dramatic series of hearings in the mid-1970s in the Senate, led by Frank Church of Idaho, that made it clear that Richard Helms, the agency director at the time, accepted that he had an obligation to do what the president wanted, even if it meant violating the law. In unpublished, closed-door testimony, Helms ruefully explained that, quote, "You almost have an immaculate conception when you do something," end quote, under secret orders from a president. Continuing, "Whether it's right that you should have it or wrong that you shall have it, the CIA works under different rules and ground rules than any other part of the government," end quote. He was essentially telling the senators that he, as head of the CIA, understood that he had been working for the Crown and not the Constitution. The Americans at work in Norway operated under the same dynamic and dutifully began working on the new problem: how to remotely detonate the C4 explosives on Biden's order. It was a much more demanding assignment than those in Washington understood. There was no way for the team in Norway to know when the president might push the button. Would it be in a few weeks, in many months, or in half a year or longer? The C4 attached to the pipelines would be triggered by a sonar buoy dropped by a plane on short notice. But the procedure involved the most advanced signal processing technology. Once in place, the delayed timing devices attached to any of the four pipelines could be accidentally triggered by the complex mix of ocean background noises throughout the heavily trafficked Baltic Sea. From near and distant ships, underwater drilling, seismic events, waves, and even sea creatures. To avoid this, the sonar buoy, once in place, would emit a sequence of unique, low-frequency tonal sounds, much like those emitted by a flute or a piano, that would be recognized by the timing device and, after a preset hours of delay, trigger the explosives. This is in parenthesis right here, and it's a quote. "You want a signal that is robust enough so that no other signal could accidentally send the pulse that detonated the explosives," end quote. I was told by Dr. Theodore Postol, professor emeritus of science, technology, and national security policy at MIT. Postol, who has served as the science advisor to the Pentagon's chief of naval operations, said the issue facing the group in Norway because of Biden's delay was one of chance. Quoting, "The longer the explosives are in the water, the greater risk there would be of a random signal that would launch the bombs." In parenthesis. Now, I'm getting close to the end of the hour, so I think I'll wait to finish this. Not that much more, but I don't want to have a train wreck against the top of the hour. So this is Pat Rabbit with Not For Public Consumption. And this is Revolution Radio. So stick around. We have content for you 24/7, 52 weeks a year. And we've been doing it for over 12 years now. 12 years and 6 weeks almost. Yeah. We own it. So come on down, stick around, and stay around. And we have a nice chat room too. It's a Matrix Elements chat, something that you may well enjoy. And let's see what we got. I am putting in my marquee again, blah blah blah. There we go. And know that coming up after me on A, after my next hour, will be Willow Andreessen with Willow's Weird World. And on B, we're going to have Mona Rattler with The Adventures of a Feral Hippie. And it just keeps going. And I'll open this up a bit more. I'll unpack it a little bit and tell you what we're up to and how we're doing. But I'm going to finish Seymour Hersh's article at the beginning of the next hour and then get into God knows what. I haven't even thought about it yet. Oh, I'm so stoked about this pedal. Oh, my bird finger on my left hand hurts. And I don't know why, because I'm not tearing it up. Working out on the guitar with it. The other fingers, yeah, kind of, but this finger doesn't seem to get as much. I don't know what. Both of them do this trigger finger now. Maybe it's from typing as much as I do, but both of them will just kind of lock in, and I'll have to, ooh, and then it's out again. Oh, who knows? Just getting old. The reverb on this amp could be a bit better, but once I get my delay pedal hooked in, that's as good as reverb. And when I get some more money, I might get a floor unit, a reverb unit. Probably can't afford a Strymon, but something neat. Something economical. So, and Deacon John and myself also have a show on Monday night where I do this too, and we talk about music, and I'll be right back.
It's no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Things were not quite right, that everything was just ever so slightly askew.
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
There have been imaginative science fiction writers for generations.
Be evasive.
But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
And, you know, I'm aware of some archaeologists that have uncovered large bones indicating giants in Virginia. Genesis chapter 6, verse 4. There were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God, plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down and...
No, that's right.
I'm Steve Crawford. Join me every Thursday night in Studio A at 6 p.m. Eastern for Factor Theory Live. Find us on www.revolution.radio. Great guests and great stories. What do you believe?
Don't miss the Crypt Rick and Jonathan Show every Saturday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Studio B, right here at Revolution Radio.
The journey begins to fun, health, and freedom.
Interested in the paranormal, murder mystery, real natural law? You enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick. Welcome to the Crypt.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And I'm back, and this be Pat Rabbit with Nah for Public Consumption here on Revolution Radio, and I'm going to finish up this article by Seymour Hersh, and he is exposing, he's blowing it open about all that took place with regard to the pipelines in the Baltic Sea. To continue. After a sip. I need a sip. Okay. On September 26th, 2022, a Norwegian Navy P-8 surveillance plane made a seemingly routine flight and dropped a sonar buoy. The signal spread underwater, initially to Nord Stream 2, and then on to Nord Stream 1. A few hours later, the high-powered C4 explosives were triggered, and three of the four pipelines were put out of commission. Within a few minutes, pools of methane gas that remained in the shuttered pipelines could be seen spreading on the water's surface, and the world learned that something irreversible had taken place. Fallout. In the immediate aftermath of the pipeline bombing, the American media treated it like an unsolved mystery. Russia was repeatedly cited as the likely culprit, spurred on by calculated leaks from the White House, but without ever establishing a clear motive for such an act of self-sabotage beyond simple retribution. A few months later, when it emerged that Russian authorities had been quietly getting estimates for the cost to repair the pipelines, the New York Times described the news as, quote, complicating theories about who was behind, end quote, the attack. No major American newspaper dug into the earlier threats to the pipelines made by Biden and Under Secretary of State Nuland.
While it was never clear why Russia would seek to destroy its own lucrative pipeline, a more telling rationale for the president's action came from Secretary of State Blinken. Asked at a press conference last September about the consequences of the worsening energy crisis in Western Europe, Blinken described the moment as a potentially good one. And this is a quote, Blinken speaking, where he said, "It's a tremendous opportunity for once and for all to remove the dependence on Russian energy, and thus to take away from Vladimir Putin the weaponization of energy as a means of advancing his imperial designs. That's very significant, and that offers tremendous strategic opportunity for the years to come. But meanwhile, we're determined to do everything we possibly can to make sure the consequences of all this are not borne by citizens in our countries, or, for that matter, around the world." That's what Antony Blinken had to say. Article picks up. More recently, Victoria Nuland expressed satisfaction at the demise of the newest of the pipelines, testifying at a Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearing in late January. She told Senator Ted Cruz, quote, "Like you, I am, and I think the administration is, very gratified to know that Nord Stream 2 is now, as you like to say, a hunk of metal at the bottom of the sea," end quote. Now here's some more comments. For some reason, my Twitters get blanked out on these pages these days. I don't know if it is the fault of the browser I'm using or what, but at least I have a bunch of text here that I can read to you from it. But here's the comment. It says, Nuland oozing smugness. Where she says? Nuland says she is very pleased that Nord Stream 2 is a hunk of metal at the bottom of the sea. And I guess this is, I don't know if this is Nuland, I don't see quotation marks, so I'm not sure who's saying this, but it continues to say, "We immediately call this as a NATO attack on another NATO country." Okay, well, it's the people who wrote the Twitter. "We immediately call this as a NATO attack on another NATO country. The Western mainstream media said Russia blew up their own pipeline." And finally, "With friends like the U.S., who needs enemies?" Okay, back to the article. The source had a very much more streetwise view of Biden's decision to sabotage more than 1,500 miles of Gazprom pipeline as winter approached. "Well," he said, speaking of the president, "I gotta admit the guy has a pair of balls. He said he was going to do it, and he did." End quote. Asked why he thought the Russians failed to respond, he said cynically, quote, "Maybe they want the capability to do the same things the U.S. did," end quote. And then he said, quote, "It was a beautiful cover story," he went on, continuing. "Behind it was a covert operation that placed experts in the field and equipment that operated on a covert signal." And his final statement, the source's final statement, was this: "The only flaw was the decision to do it." End quote. There is that article, which came out in the last day or so, and it's making tidal waves. It is making tsunamis. So, and in case you ever wondered about Seymour Hersh, here's something about him. Seymour M. Hersh's fearless reporting has earned him fame, front page bylines, a staggering collection of awards, and no small amount of controversy. His story is one of fierce independence. Faced with pressure from corporate interests, the various muscular arms of the government, and occasionally from outright criminals, Hersh has been relentless in his pursuit of truth and his belief in challenging the official narrative. He is navigated through cover-ups, deceit, and outright crimes against humanity in the morass of war, espionage, and politics. He has been a staff writer for The New Yorker and The New York Times and established himself at the forefront of investigative journalism in 1970 when he was awarded a Pulitzer Prize as a freelancer for his expose of the massacre in the Vietnamese hamlet of My Lai. Or My Lai, I hear it both, okay? Since then, he has received the George Polk Award 5 times, the National Magazine Award for Public Interest 2 times, the Los Angeles Times Book Prize, the National Book Critics Circle Award, the George Orwell Award, and dozens of other accolades. He lives in Washington, D.C. And here, finally, is a comment from the editors of SOTT. They say, "So the Norwegians and the Danes were in on it. But it's also likely the Israelis, Brits, and Germans were too. NATO is far more than a military alliance. Almost all its member states are fully integrated components in a globalist Franken country we might term NATO-stan or Westernia." So true. We live in NATO-stan. We live in Westernia. What a terrible place to live. I wish I wasn't here now. I've watched it get bad over the decades, but now it's just plain damn, I wish I wasn't here. Doesn't feel like a really safe place to be. I don't feel like I'm among friends here somehow. I find myself among some other musicians or something, because we're so out of it, it doesn't much matter where we are most of the time. So, there you go. Yeah. Let's see. Where's the moon? The moon's in Libra by now. It went in last night, I think. Let me take a look, because I didn't even do that at the beginning of the show. I so wanted to get into this that I didn't even do that. So what do we got? The sun, is it 20 and a half? Wait, no, I better. It's pushing 21 degrees of Aquarius. We're in the last 9 days of Aquarius as we near Pisces, and spring is on the way. It's definitely on the way around here. I mean, it's already here, actually. The moon is at pushing 5 degrees of Libra. And Mercury is at pushing 40 minutes all the time, so I'll say pushing. It's pushing 28 degrees of Capricorn. Venus is at 17 degrees Pisces. Mars is 12 and a half of Gemini. Going slow still, coming out of that retrograde. It's not making tracks yet. Jupiter is at pushing 8 of Aries. Saturn is at almost 27 of Aquarius, so we're going to have a Sun-Saturn conjunction in about 6 days. Yeah, neither here nor there, but we'll see. People born under Sun-Saturn aspects have a side of them that is awfully serious. I mean, there's so many other factors that can say otherwise, but still, that will have them being awfully serious. Saturn is serious. They take everything too seriously. That's Saturn. It works somewhere. Lighten up. Uranus is at 15 degrees of Taurus. Neptune is at almost 24 of Pisces. And Pluto is almost 29 of Capricorn. We're getting Pluto. Pluto's on the cusp of Capricorn and Aquarius. Once you pass 27 and a half of any sign, you are theoretically, technically, you're on the cusp. But if you're in the last
getting into the last degree, as we're going to be with Pluto, definitely that's a cusp feel. That'll be interesting. It's also said the last degree of any sign is critical. I'm not sure what they mean when they say that, but it kind of makes sense if you put it together in your head. You know? Okay, yeah, it seems right. Uh-huh. So, let's see if there's anything else that there's no big aspects that I see, nothing screaming at me. The moon will be making an opposition to Jupiter. We're coming into a moon opposition to Jupiter, and that's good. I love that. I can't have enough of moon-Jupiter aspects. Are just lots of fun, really. The trines are said to be, you know, they indicate states of being, and that's, you know, very beneficent and everything, but the squares are just in your face. Squares, oppositions, conjunctions, they're right there, and you feel them, and oh yeah, just don't overdo, because Jupiter can't overdo. However, it's a lot of fun, and it's a good feeling. So we're coming into a moon opposition Jupiter as we get into the evening. Those who have evening shows will have a good time, for sure. And so I give them a blessing. And let's see. Hi, Dawn. Thank you. Let's see now what we might be looking at for, because I've been putting articles in right, left, and center. Brief introduction to gypsies. Oh, what's this one? This is America's culture now. Oh, God. Yeah, you probably noticed. Was this the Grammys the other day? This is on Monday the 6th. And this is just, you know, really kind of stupidly sick. I mean, what's the point? Or what? I sure am brought to you by Pfizer. Must be some meaning to that name. Anyway, let's see. Trump is PF. Trump Pfizer. No. Okay, let's see what it says. By Michael Snyder. The most important news. This is America's culture now. And that's a real problem. It's where this culture is going. I don't want to be here. I really don't want to be here. To commence. If people that lived 50 or 60 years ago could see us today, what would they think of our culture? I believe that the performance of Unholy at the Grammar Awards on Sunday night will go down in history as a pivotal cultural moment, like Biden's speech that time, whose back lit all red and black. Yes, the horror movie-inspired performance that Sam Smith and Kim Petras came up with was designed to get as much attention as possible. They wanted people like me to write about it, and that is exactly what I am doing. But just because they were seeking attention does not change the fact that their performance was unspeakably evil. And it also does not change the fact that millions of their fans absolutely adored it. We have gotten to a point where our culture openly celebrates wickedness. And that is a very dangerous place to be. Oh, no kidding. Sam Smith and Kim Petras knew exactly what they were doing. And the mainstream media was alerted in advance that, quote, there will be calls to CBS from outraged Christians. You don't have to be a Christian to be outraged by this kind of bullshit. But anyway, okay, there was that, end quote. And then we have there's a quote maybe from a CBS conversation that goes something like, but my sources say the production of this number, quote, is going to make a lot of people very upset. And I guarantee there will be calls to CBS from outraged Christians, end quote. Apparently, Smith, who is 6'5" and a big person, will be playing Satan. There will be a lot of devil-type stuff. Devil worship. and pyrotechnics like you've never seen, end quote. My source adds, quote, it's over the top and really crazy, end quote. Yeah, so much for that. Back to the article. They understood very well that people like us would be deeply offended by their performance, but they went ahead and did it anyway. Of course, there are many other groups that can never be offended on national television by any circumstances. But offending Christians is perfectly okay in this day and age. And like I say, it's just offensive. You don't need to be a Christian. Good God. Okay, no pun. All right, to continue. And CBS knew precisely what it was doing. In a tweet that has now apparently been deleted, the official CBS Twitter account boldly declared that we are ready to worship. Oh, boy. How sick is that? Quite appropriately, Madonna was picked to introduce this performance, and she made it abundantly clear that she knew that she also knew exactly what was about to happen. Where she said something like, oh, thanks, Don. Okay, this is Madonna. It has to do with Madonna, and perhaps there's some quoting from her, but it says, before they took to the stage, Madonna made an appearance asking the crowd, quote, are you ready for a little controversy? Here's what I've learned after four decades in music. If they call you shocking, scandalous, troublesome, problematic, provocative, or dangerous, you are definitely on to something. Continuing, I am here to give thanks to all the rebels out there forging a new path and taking the heat for all of it. All you troublemakers out there need to know that your fearlessness does not go unnoticed. You are seen, you are heard, and most of all, you are appreciated. End quote. She concluded, quote, so now, speaking of controversy, it gives me great pleasure to introduce two incredibly talented artists who have risen above the noise, the doubt, the critics onto something beautifully unholy. Here are two Grammy Award winners, Sam Smith and Kim Petras, end quote. So that was the thing with Madonna. The article picks it up. Following Madonna's introduction, Sam Smith and Kim Petras unleashed what was perhaps the most demonic performance that we've ever seen on national television. The following is how the official website of the Grammy Awards described their performance. Here we go. Surrounded by long-haired acolytes in identical red sheaths, Smith kicked off the performance in an outfit of latex and a devil-horned top hat before Petras made her grand entrance in a giant cage guarded by a trio of she-devils. Quote, mummy don't know daddy's getting hot at the body shop doing something unholy, end quote. The duo belted in hellish harmony as a wall of fire erupted on stage behind Petras's personal prison. The article. Needless to say, this performance immediately went viral on Twitter, and many of the users very clearly understood what they had just witnessed. And one viewer tweeted, quote, you don't have to be super religious to be disturbed by that Sam Smith devil-worshipping performance, end quote. Another posted, quote, I know we on the right probably use the word satanic too often, but this performance from Sam Smith is literally a tribute to Satan, end quote. And I think Liz Wheeler had one of the best tweets of the night, where she said, don't fight the culture wars, they say. Meanwhile, demons are teaching your kids to worship Satan. I could throw up. The article. Can you imagine what the rest of the world must be thinking about us after seeing this? This is what high-level entertainment looks like in America in 2023. It is absolutely disgusting. Later on in the show, host Trevor Noah also demonstrated that he knew in advance that this was coming because he had jokes about it ready to go. Here we go. After the performance, host Trevor Noah immediately joked about the fact that the satanic themes would outrage some viewers. Pretending to be on the phone to his mother, he was heard saying, quote, "No, Mom, it wasn't the actual devil. Yeah, you did warn me about Hollywood," end quote. As stars such as Jennifer Lopez and Ben Affleck laughed along, he ended the call and stated, quote, "She said she's praying for all of us," end quote. They all think it's really funny to mock Christians. And they know that only a very small percentage of the population is going to get upset about it. They can literally air a tribute to Satan during our most important music awards ceremony while millions of people are watching, and most people simply do not care. At least I can say I wasn't watching because I don't have a TV and I don't watch the Grammys, but anyway. And immediately following the performance, a message popped up on the screen informing us that all of this was being sponsored by Pfizer. Man, oh man. In the entire history of television, I don't know if there has ever been a more perfect match between a performance and a sponsor. Next year, artists that perform at the Grammy Awards will have to come up with something even more demonic to top what Sam Smith and Kim Petras did this year. So what will they do? Will they sacrifice children on an altar as they chant praises to the devil? We have reached a point where literally anything goes, and nobody seems to care that the fabric of our society is coming apart at the seams right in front of our eyes. Whether you like it or not, this is America's culture now. We have openly embraced evil, and evil has openly embraced us. There you go. Yeah. It's pretty bad. It's really feckin' pretty bad. Hey, Bill, thank you. Okay. Now, what do we got? What can I regale you with? I don't know. Where am I? That's weird. I don't know where my internet bill is. I like to get that paid because internet's not something I can easily do without. Let's see. This might be... Oh, I shouldn't have done that. Come back. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, little page. Here, let's see. Let's try it one more time. Let's see if, what? What the hell am I doing? I know what I need to do. Okay. Now, here I come. Oh, am I coming? The rabbit's confused. Let's see. Move the motor. Move the motor. Now, let's see. Okay, this is by the Batyushka. And actually, I haven't even read this one yet. But I bet it's good. Because he's always good. He is a Russian Orthodox priest, actually. And that's what Batyushka means. It means, it's not the word for father, but it means father when you call a priest this word. Introduction, the origins of Anglo-Zionism. Some of these, I just see them and I throw them in. I bookmark them as a reflex. When I discovered the Saker in 2014, I at once discovered his term of genius, Anglo-Zionism. That, after all, is exactly what it is. It is Anglo-Zionism that has poisoned the European well for over 300 years. The bankers who left Venice for Amsterdam and then moved to London, having financed their agent, the bloodthirsty Anglo, Cromwell, and so brought the monarchy in England under merchant banker, that is to say, parliamentary control, founding the Bank of England in 1694 and bribing the Scots to union in 1707, were Zionists. So began Anglo-Zionism. The Anglos were the traders of British imperialism, and the Zionists were the bankers of British imperialism, of whatever nationality they might be. Of course, there was intermixing, as some Anglos became bankers and some Zionists became traders, for example, even moving to the Caribbean for the slave trade, from which the family of the former UK Prime Minister Cameron made its millions. And Mr. Cameron's great-great-grandfather was a German-Jewish banker who became British citizen in 1871. It is a small world. Anglo-Zionism in Europe. I read the little titles. That's why I say these things just, you know, almost sotto voce. From all this was born the Anglo-political system. Generally speaking, the right-wing party, the Tories, were the Anglos. The left-wing party, today called Labour, were the Zionists, though, again, there were exceptions. For example, the Jewish Prime Minister Disraeli was in the right-wing party. This system has continued in the UK to this day, where, unsurprisingly, they talk about their Judeo-Christian civilization. Thus, the supposedly Labour Blair regime ministers were almost all Scots, homosexuals, and Jews. When the ultra-Tory Blair, son of Thatcher, was dispatched after doing his appointed duty, a man called Jeremy Corbyn eventually became the leader of the Labour Party. Unlike Blair, he actually was left-wing, a true-believing socialist. As a result, he was naturally pro-Palestinian, and so was immediately branded by the Anglo-Zionist British press as an anti-Semite. Aren't the Palestinians Semites? Anyway, they got rid of him through intrigues, including inducing him to be anti-Brexit. Two-thirds of his supporters, his working-class backbone, were pro-Brexit, and so, unnaturally, but with no other choice, voted pro-Brexit Tory. Corbyn was replaced with an establishment millionaire called Starmer, who looks like a cardboard cutout of a Tory. How did he get the job? Simply because he is married to a Jew, and his children are therefore Jews. That is to say, if the mother is Jewish, you are Jewish. If your dad's Jewish, you're not Jewish. However, the same system was exported all over Europe. In the Soviet Union, the ideologue of the Third International was Bronstein, Trotsky, who wanted world revolution. In Romania, the man who replaced Ceausescu in 1989 was a Jew. The present Romanian leader is a German. The situation in the Ukraine is well known from the billionaire arms dealer Poroshenko, real name Waltzman, to the millionaire actor Zelensky, his name probably a translation of Gruen. In France, the Zionist lobby has been strong from the 19th century on, although the current French President Macron is French. He is a Rothschild banker. Franco-Zionism. There are dozens of other examples throughout Europe over the last 300 years, especially since Napoleon. Anglo-Zionism in the U.S. However, the main bastion of Anglo-Zionism is undoubtedly the USA, which the bankers from London seriously colonized during the First World War. Specifically during the 1916 turning point, when it became apparent to the Round Table Organization that there would only be one winner, neither Germany nor Great Britain, but the USA. As soon as Russia had been taken out of the equation through U.S. bankers via their British agents and Russian traitors in Petrograd in early 1917, The first U.S. troops appeared in France less than 1 month later. All had been pre-planned. Today in the U.S., the Republican Party represents the Anglos, and the Democratic Party, the Zionists. The billionaire Trump, like Bush, is a typical white Anglo nationalist WASP, America First. On the other hand, Biden is a typical Zionist, just like Obama and Clinton before him, though quite unlike Kennedy. An electoral accident. He, of course, had to be eliminated, and he was. For 250 years, the Anglos and the Zionists have worked together in the U.S. They have had the same self-interested interests, money and power. However, there are now discussions between them regarding the Ukraine. Already half of the Anglo-Republicans want out of the Ukraine. It is too costly, and they want to save the U.S. and their own fortunes from its multiple self-inflicted wounds just in case it goes under. Oh, it will. But the Zionists are thinking along the same lines. There is only one solution. The Ukraine. The Anglos wanted the Ukraine in order to defeat their traditional rival, Russia. However, for the Zionists, the Ukraine had another purpose. It was to destroy white Europe, the same purpose they had in fomenting the First and Second World Wars. So, ensuring Zionist domination of the world, globalism. Not all neocons are Wolfowitzes, Kagans, and Newlands. Many are Anglos. Today, we are already seeing that the Republicans are increasingly beginning to support Zaluzhny, the Kiev military commander, whereas the Democrats still stand behind the Jewish Zelensky, but are now wavering. The Republicans originally wanted to weaken Russia. The Republicans are nationalists. So are the Russians. It is now just dawning on them that Russia does not want to recreate the Soviet Empire or any other sort of empire. All they want to do is protect Russians, not to invade other countries. In any case, they are not going to weaken Russia anymore through Ukraine. All that they have done so far is to strengthen Russia. The Ukraine has not served its purpose. As for the Zionists, they are happy to kill as many white Europeans, especially Russian and Ukrainians, as possible. But above all, they want world power. The interests of Anglos and Zionists coincide. For if the Russians do not want world power after all, then the real rival is China, which has real mercantile power. Therefore, the pivot to China, where there is real money. Once the U.S. has lost in the Ukraine, and Kadyrov confidently predicts that it will be over by the end of 2023, the U.S. will turn its attention to China. But it is already happening. That is what the balloon show was all about. China is a much more interesting option for the money grubbers, whether Anglos or Zionists. But where does that leave benighted Europe? Europe's demons. A specter has long been haunting Europe, or rather two specters, or rather two legions of demons. Unionist demons and nationalist demons. Centripetal and centrifugal forces who have both been issued with strict instructions never to allow unity in diversity. The unionists are represented by all the big, supranational, unaccountable, and so violent, corrupt, and bullying institutions whose blood-soaked hands have tormented Europe for over 2,000 years, the pagan Roman Empire, the Frankish barbarian Holy Roman Empire, the reformed centralist papacy with its Crusades, and tyrannical medieval unity, Napoleon, Hitler, and the EU. These torments all come out of exactly the same unionist cauldron, boiling with a love of power, greed, and hatred for the nation-state and the little people. The demons dance around the cauldron, hellishly gloating at the immense suffering and bloodshed they have caused to the innocent for 2 millennia. Always the same victims. The nationalists are represented by wars and massacres between the Germans and the Wends, the English and the Welsh and the Scots, the medieval Italian city-states, the principalities of medieval Rus, by the Anglo-French Hundred Years' War, the Central European Wars of Religion, the Normans and the English, the Turks and the Greeks, the English and the Irish, the Russians, both before and after 1917, and the Poles, Finns, Latvians, Georgians, and Ukrainians, the Swedes and the Finns, the Germans and the French and the Bretons and Corsicans, the Danes and the Norwegians, the Greeks and the Bulgarians and Macedonians, the Austrians and the Serbs and the Bulgarians and Croats, the Spanish and the Basques and Catalans, the Czechs and the Slovaks, the Hungarians and the Romanians, the Ukrainians and the Carpatho-Russians, the EU and Brexit, Grexit, Negxit, Frexit, etc. And by all those many other interminable bullying conflicts between big neighbors and little neighbors, between capitals and provinces. One such conflict is going on at this very moment in the Ukraine, with hundreds of thousands dead already. These torments, too, all come out of exactly the same nationalist cauldron, boiling with the love of blood and hatred for unity. The demons dance around the cauldron, hellishly gloating at the immense suffering and bloodshed they have caused to the innocent for 2 millennia. Always the same victims. Overcoming the demons. The most dangerous thing in European history is not the suicidal stupidity of Europeans, but when outsiders make it even worse by interfering. For example, to some extent, to what extent exactly is still being debated, the British elite in their island were responsible for meddling in continental Europe and so creating both the First and Second World Wars. However, modern Europe is the invention of the U.S., itself a union, built on the blood of over 600,000 of its own. It wanted to create a similar union in Europe. The result is the EU, with its ring of captive stars. Quote, one ring to rule them all, one ring to find them, one ring to bring them all, and in the darkness bind them, in the land of Mordor, where the shadows lie. End quote. More clearly, the latest conflict in the Ukraine has come about completely through the meddling of the world bully, which styles itself the world's policeman, the U.S. As the U.S. is now losing in this conflict, and losing very badly, what will happen once the U.S. world bully is gone from the scene, not only from the Ukraine, but from Europe in general? After all, the U.S. departure from Europe seems to be inevitable in the coming generation, maybe by the centenary of the U.S. occupation of Europe in 2045, if not well before that. Will the present unionist U.S.-devised United States of Europe, the EU, which is about to collapse with its demons of unionism, fall back into petty nationalisms and inter-tribal massacres as before? Will Europeans once more have to obey the demons of nationalism? Could Europeans not at last learn to live in peace after 2,000 years of interfering in the lives of other Europeans and, far worse, after 1,000 years of interfering in the lives of non-Europeans? What could replace unionism and nationalism? Conclusion. There can be no peace in Europe until the East and the West of Europe accept one another on an equal footing. And the only axis which can unite Europe is the Moscow, Berlin, Paris axis, the one which was disrupted before 1914. This axis is the only one that could bring in Budapest, Bucharest, Belgrade, Athens, Warsaw, Stockholm, Rome, Madrid, and even London, even if the latter has first to overturn its brutal establishment by violence, even though the U.S. will have dropped it. And we include Vilnius, Riga, and Tallinn in this. The Balts may not like Russians because of the Soviet occupation, but that was a long time ago, and the Balts, unlike their puppet elites, do not like the American occupation that replaced it and being forced to exile themselves abroad just to live. To ensure peace in Europe and to avoid both unionism and nationalism, there needs to be a confederation of Europe from Moscow to Berlin to Paris to London. The rest will gather round them. If such a confederation can be designed with care, it could achieve that long, elusive balance of unity in diversity which Europe needs. For far too long, Europe has been on the wrong side of history through its suicidal impulses of inviting its enemies in. It is time to stop sitting on the U.S. fence and climb it. Cooperation with Moscow, rather than conflict, is to open the gateway to resources and all Eurasia, and to cease that foolish isolationism which for 1,000 years has made Europe into a seat of ethnocentric pride and aggressive violence. 7 February 2023. I always liked about Badiushka's articles. He's Russian and he writes English better than most English speakers, if you ask me. Okay, this is Pat Rabbit with Not For Public Consumption, and we are at 48 minutes after the hour, are we? That's what it looks like. Squint, squint. Yep. Coming up after me will be Willow Andreessen, and then the mechanic if he's around, and then Deacon John and Duke Guy, and something, I'm not sure what we're putting in there. Then the New American Dream Boys and the Ice Age Conversations, and after me on B will be Mona Radler and something. I'm sorry, I just don't know what, I think it varies. Then Mario, then Mr. Rowe, then J. Charles Parker, and then Roundtables. So stick around. I mean, look at what's going on. You know, I try to look at things in the most simple way possible. I like to see the biggest picture. I like to get up to 80 and 90,000 feet. I like to see the curvature of the planet when I have my views. I like my meta views. And the West is saying, you know, if this isn't won, that's the end of NATO. Look, everything they've said, if that doesn't amount to a declaration of war, if undeclared, it still is declared. In other words, that's what we have here. And Russia knows this. I think that's why one of the reasons they're taking, not the only, but one of the reasons they're taking so much time, because they are building up. They have put their arms industry into high gear right now. They're grinding out more than at any time in history, I believe. And they're capable. They've got the resources. And they have the means. They have the factories. So, what's it going to be? Show wasn't here. Oh, well. Stick me somewhere in the Volga year old. It'd be a lovely place to be. Get some great music in Russia. They really do. I'm so sick of this Western world, I could puke. I think we all could, actually. And that earthquake in Turkey, was that natural or not? Tell me. What do you think? Was it natural? Or was that induced? You know, Sweden has their own harp. Ice Cap, or Ice Cat. And those weird, weird lenticular clouds seen in Turkey the day or two before the quake makes you go, It is strongly in place among the things that make you go, Then, of course, the flashes of light, but you always see flashes of light before the quakes start. There was a good video of that. It got pretty bad real quick. I guess whatever took that video survived intact, so though it was at an altitude, maybe on a hillside, I don't know, but crazy flashes of light, like lightning, as the static electricity is released or whatever it does. And Turkey looked at Sweden because people in Sweden had been, you know, cursing the prophet. And they had been burning Qurans. And then Turkey said, no, we ain't ever voting for you to get into NATO. And this, good Lord. And when last I heard, it's up to 9,000 dead. That's so tragic. Very, very sad. Hi, Doc. How you doing? Oh, God. We learn more every day. Every day ticks along. And when we go to sleep at night, things are happening that we'll have to quick pick up and learn when we get up the next day, or we'll be behind. Can't fall behind. Well, they do what they want, all right. So, I'll be back next week, same time, same place. More fun facts for you, reading from things and change things up. I'll have my new pedal. We'll see how I can make it howl. Actually, I had the boost up, but I turned it down. It's a little clearer. So stick around. We got content for you all day and all night. As we get into the spring, light, life, and love. May the spirit of goodness reach out into all space. And may the positive powers of those principles overcome all negative conditions. And may peace profound reign everywhere. So mote it be. Amen. 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 How you like to have it set, so when you don't pick it hard, it's clear, and you hit it hard, and it starts overdriving. Something like a good boost pedal. And thank you, bro. Appreciate it. And I'll be coming back. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Doc. And I'm trying to poo-bye it out and take my So, we've been here over 12 years and we do it with your help. That's the only way we do it. If you have not given, the station won't be here. There is no other means of pushing this down the road, which is the magic of it. It's a non-profit thing. It's entirely user-supported, and we're not going to take profit out of users giving in good faith to run the station. And all the money's received, run the station. We take, you're not paying us. We take nothing. And it's a labor of love on the part of everybody, management, hosts, and we have a nice chat room. We have a nice community here. And come and sample the goods, sample the wares, and I will be back next week. Same time, same place, from Tales from the Warren. Y'all be good. Take care. Be well. God bless. Pat Rabbit signing out.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me,
give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their